Our website at WGTD.org.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News, and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive, Marcia Connett, who is a Southeast Regional Consultant for Wisconsin Literacy, and she provides literacy education support and management expertise, and Xander Miller, a librarian at the Kenosha Public Library who also works on technology and digital skills. Community Matters also shares its time slot with the 30-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Hello, this is Xander Miller, and welcome to Community Matters. So, if you've been in Kenosha this past 6 months or so, you've probably seen a bunch of guys in uniform, construction uniform, digging up yards and installing something in the ground. They'll be wearing something related to Sci-Fi Network, and that's because in September 22nd, 2022, it was announced that the city of Kenosha and Sci-Fi Network were launching a $100 million Kenosha Fiber City project with the goal of making Kenosha a fiber networked city and be one of the, have some of the fastest internet speeds in the U.S. The city announced that. John Antaramian, the mayor, is in support of the project city manager, all of them explaining that it's being funded privately. The goal to provide access to all of Kenosha's 40,000 household businesses and institutions with speeds up to 10 gigabytes per second. And to talk more about this, I have Rob Munez, a division head at Kenosha Public Library, and an advocate for connecting people online, having Wi-Fi connectability, and one of the folks that helped extend the Wi-Fi from the libraries, the Kenosha Public Libraries, out through the parking lots and out into the neighborhoods they're around, helping supply that Wi-Fi, and then a hotspot lending program along with Chromebooks that check out for a year, helping bridge a digital divide. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you, Xander. Good to be here.
So what, in your words, how would you explain what even a being a fiber network city or a fiber city is?
Ooh, that's a good one. So really, we're looking at having fiber networking, which is fiber itself is just the thickness of a few human hairs here at that. Relatively fragile. It's not made out of glass like it used to be, but there's still a glass type element in there to be able to allow light instead of what you typically would have right now if you had a traditional internet service from Spectrum or AT&T. That would be electrical impulses that are being transferred over copper lines. Fiber is actually light pulses. So it is a literally a laser beam being blasted through these little tiny channels to be able to connect you online. And of course there's specialized equipment on both sides to be able to decode these flashes of light and being able to understand of, okay, I've typed in google.com at my computer and now the server is going to be able to send me to the right website information there. So what this winds up meaning is that in the long run, we're going to be better prepared as a city, as a community for this, well, what we're already living in now, an online environment, an online world, an interconnected world. What we've seen, especially during the COVID pandemic, when it peaked in 2020 and when we saw everything happen and we had the lockdown, safer at home orders across the country, was individuals not knowing how to, I have to order my food online now from the grocery store. We had senior citizens without internet that needed help with that. We had younger individuals, again, needing help with that. We had families that suddenly had to be displaced with education, where the child needed to be online, and then school districts having to try and get the hotspots out to the students. And well, as you saw, being one of the, also working here at the library as well, of seeing how people were just trying to scramble and figure all this stuff out, and really were trying to bridge this divide in the long term, being able to no longer have these haves and have nots, but offer internet to everyone in a high speed fashion.
Yeah, that is, that makes sense for that connection mode. When you look at a Wisconsin broadband map, there's some areas even in Kenosha City that don't have high speed networks. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, a few areas do have those high speed network capabilities, but some areas are still under 10 megabytes per second when you look at Kenosha.
Yep. And when we start having those kinds of speeds, it's one thing to no longer not to have a high speed internet connection just for leisure purposes, but when you're having to stream a video or live stream a Zoom meeting with a teacher, or have a meeting with an employee or an employer, especially when you're going to more online interviews now, that does actually have an effect on people's ability to find employment at that time.
So you're even saying that folks who have had slower connections have had a disadvantage compared to folks with a higher speed connection.
Correct. Yep.
So it sounds like that goal of getting people connected, that's a great goal, especially mm-hmm. coming out of this pandemic. But why these fiber lines? Because you mentioned there is Spectrum, there is AT&T. What was missing with having those two? Because, I mean, those two networks can get those high speeds, but, like, why did the city make this partnership to go along
that path? To add another layer of infrastructure. Yeah, so what's Spectrum AT&T lines are unfortunately typically tend to be more limited because they are based off older technologies of what would be referred to as twisted pair or phone line, essentially, from back in the day. Sorry, I've taken enough tech classes, and I tend to speak the jargon still when I shouldn't. But then you also have Spectrum utilizing cable lines. Those are limited in what they're capable of. And when you start trying to get higher speed internet through those lines, you're talking about these companies having to upgrade additional infrastructure, having these quote nodes, as they like to call them, these kinds of boxes all around neighborhoods and things like that, so that they can keep these signals boosted. And but then you wind up running into issues when you have too many people on these networks and everyone's on at the same time, you see speeds drop. Unfortunately, fiber is more of a future proof. So right now, we don't know who the internet service provider is yet. That'll be announced on the Fiber City website when it is time. But what has been said is September of this year, The ISP will be chosen at the very latest, and they will be up and running with the first sets of houses ready to go to be enrolled. So what you'll be able to do is actually get access into the network. They'll have to, just like with any other service provider, they'll have to bring the line into the house and connect equipment to there. But if in the future, if the speeds, the 1 gigabit speed that this fiber will be able to release right away isn't satisfactory, it's easier to upgrade. That's what I mean by future-proofing. It is much easier to upgrade these lines. The Kenosha Public Library, for example, we run our own fiber backbone, as we like to call it, between all four locations. So we actually have a fiber line between all four locations that is right now at a 10 gigabit speed. If we needed to, for any reason in the future, to upgrade, it is literally replacing a card, and unfortunately our listeners cannot see me holding up my hands, but it's about the size of a business card in our equipment. We have to replace that on four devices, and then we can upgrade ourselves to 20 gigabit, 40 gigabit, 80 gigabit. We can easily do these kinds of things. And so this is also something too that our residents, but also our businesses, will be able to take advantage of, where they'll be able to start off with a relatively slow, in air quotes here, 1 gigabit speed. And then in the future, if it's needed, it can be upgraded in the future a lot easier than what we're looking at this other kinds of infrastructure that are unfortunately aging. They worked for us when we were talking 90s, early 2000s, but it's this time we need a little bit better now.
Yeah, as we've learned through the past few years, streaming has become such a big deal, or using internet enabled devices or Internet of Things devices of some sort. Mm-hmm. There's so much that's connected. What you're saying here is that with Spectrum or AT&T, with their equipment, the more things that are connected, the slower the overall network, even throughout an entire area, mm-hmm. is. So really, these fiber lines, they're going to put some competition to Spectrum and AT&T.
Yeah, and with competition's a good thing, because now it's going to force more innovation, more hopefully better customer service in the long run, from having just having a third party there as a level of competition. The other thing too, it will also we'll wind up seeing as possibly price adjustments with some of the vendor ISPs that are out there. One thing too I did want to mention is, speaking of price, is the we don't know what the actual price is, going off of what we've seen with other cities where they've been at having similar projects done. Could be looking between $50 and $70 a month, all depending on who the internet service provider is going to be. One thing that I did ask early on the project is if there was going to be a special discount for in lower income individuals, if they'd be able to qualify for something. And it sounds like that's going to be something that will be an option here as well, of being able to have possibly a $30 a month plan for those that are on some sort of assisted living program or food subsidy program, that are really trying to save as much as they can per month. In addition to, these individuals may also qualify for the Affordable Connectivity Program from the federal government, which I believe right now about 50% of Kenosha is actually signed up for, of the city of Kenosha. So hopefully that other 50% can know someone that's listening to this program and we'll be able to get connected there. But what that'll actually do is help subsidize their internet bill as well by $30 a month. So theoretically free internet, if not super reduced, low cost. I can speak from experience here. I have helped sign my mom up for this, and she pays right now, I think, a nickel a month,
wow,
5 cents a month for internet. So, yeah, she's very grateful for that. A retired teacher. So, yeah, it's been helpful.
I kind of want to go back just a bit because you talked about, you know, pricing is matters here. We know that Spectrum's opening package, only for the first year, mm-hmm, they start at $50 a month. And it's looking like this could be around that range. But the thing that Spectrum does, just for, you know, my own plan with Spectrum, mm-hmm, for example, is that over time it goes up.
Yeah.
It can go up $5 at a time, $10 at a time. Those seem to be a cap with them.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's not. That would take, I believe, probably some level of legislation from the FCC or some sort of state-level legislation in order to prevent those kinds of price increases.
Yeah, but it seems like with the other fiber cities, with the research you've done, that the prices at least seem to normalize around that, where Spectrum starts for their pricing.
Yeah. Yeah, they tend to normalize around there, and that's kind of where they're at because they already have this level of infrastructure. Like I was saying, they already have this newer infrastructure put in place, so they're not having to do much in the way of upgrading constantly and trying to have something old work with something new necessarily. It's like trying to constantly reinvesting in an older car. You know, mm-hmm, if you're you know, your transmission goes out, your alternator goes out, you have to replace the oil and so on and so forth. Having to replace all these components that that are just at their end of life, unfortunately.
It constantly depreciates rather than appreciates.
Yeah.
Without, you know, there's a point where putting money into it just isn't worth it. You just buy the new thing. But it seems like for these fiber city lines, the cost can be consistent because upgrading it is as simple as replacing a chip.
Yeah.
And once they're there, they're there.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, once it's been replaced, it's fine. Does this mean that they have some higher level, at a higher level networking infrastructure, more expensive equipment to replace as that equipment depreciates over time? Yeah, they do, but they, just like any other kind of business model, you plan for that kind of stuff in advance. You upgrade your infrastructure as you need to. And this infrastructure, too, will also be expanding with the city of Kenosha, because I know there's some agreements between Kenosha and parts of the county where, just to clean up the borders, some houses are going from county into Kenosha territory over the next several years. So as that happens, those houses will also be brought into this program as well.
That's good, because when you look at the broadband map for Wisconsin, you look at Kenosha County, mm-hmm, a lot more of the areas of the county are less than 5 megabits per second download speeds, which is horrendous.
It is, unfortunately, and that's that all attributes to the infrastructure that is out there. Of, you know, it is more rural. It's, you know, Kenosha is most areas, especially around the city, are kind of unique, where you have this urban, suburban, and then suddenly you cross the street and you start hitting rural territory, and mm-hmm, that's when it becomes much more difficult to get infrastructure out, because there is a higher cost to being able to connect houses that are potentially, you know, miles apart in some cases. here. That's probably more on the extreme side, but having to have that. It actually reminds me of a story that my grandfather was telling me. He grew up in on a farm in Houston, outside Houston, Texas. It wasn't until he was 18 or 19 years old that they finally got electricity out onto the farm.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
So, yeah, he had a radio sitting in his closet waiting to be able to plug that in once electricity came to the farm there. So, yeah, there are... I feel like this is kind of in a similar fashion where... you have to have that kind of infrastructure there, and you can have that computer sitting waiting for it, but yeah, it does unfortunately take a bit for that to happen.
Yeah, it's like having a they have 4K monitors now, but you don't have the speeds to actually use that 4K monitor. That's always just super sad to hear about. You got this 4K monitor, but you can't do anything with it. So you mentioned something called Affordable Connectivity Program.
Yes.
What is that? How can that be afforded to knock down internet prices like that? That doesn't sound
feasible. It originally started as the Emergency Connectivity Funding, ECF funding, during the 2020 pandemic. It was an emergency bill that was passed by the Congress and given to the FCC to be able to distribute. And it was distributed in a couple of ways. One was to go to schools to help them be able to afford Chromebooks and hotspots and other remote working tools that were needed by teachers, by students, by staff in general. The libraries, like you had mentioned during my intro, we were able to take advantage of the same thing too. We used it to upgrade our wireless access points to be able to push our network out, so it can, in some areas, I know we are spanning two city blocks potentially. It's not much as I would like it to, but it's better than where we were before, where we barely got 10 feet out of the building. We also used it to upgrade the cellular internet access points on our book truck, our bookmobile, and the Wi-Fi van that we have, to go from 4G connectivity to 5G connectivity, prepping for the future there as well, and also to get our own set of Chromebooks and hotspots to be able to circulate to those that that are that do not have students in KUSD, but still need some kind of high-speed internet, either for school or for just personal use to be able to connect.
So really, there was just a lot of money thrown in by Congress to have organizations help people connect to the internet, connect to schools, because this is like 2020, 2021, really, where everyone was still at home. Schools were shut down still. People were working from home for the vast majority. If you don't have connections, you can't go to school. You can't get a job. Mm-hmm. You can't go do anything. That funding was that ECF funding.
Correct.
And so somehow in there, they became this other funding. So how did that happen?
So it wound up being when it came time for the ECF to be renewed, that's when it was actually a secondary pot of money was set aside to keep the program going for, I believe it was, can't remember right now off the top of my head, I apologize, but it was either 6 or 10 years to be able to fund the program for. So so that focusing on households at this point, being able to have them connected, because there was already a program called Lifeline, and that's still in progress, that's still in existence right now, where you can get $10 off your cell phone bill or your landline bill per month. And this is kind of like a sister program to that. So it's, think Lifeline just for the modern day, to be able to have that kind of connectivity there.
So now that has turned into getting just individuals connected to it. Instead of necessarily organizations, you mean the households.
The households. That's where we're that's where the focus is now. And really trying to bridge that digital divide there. Because, yeah, there are... So affordability is one barrier to access. And of course, as we've already talked about, it's just the infrastructure, having that kind of barrier there. Now there's, there are pushes to use different types of technology at this point. We've seen Starlink from SpaceX launching satellites in orbit. Google at one point in time had Project Loon, which was using basically weather balloons to be able to broadcast internet out. That program, I believe, has been retired by them. Then there's T-Mobile and a handful of other cellular providers that are utilizing 5G, being able to use that to access internet at the home there. And of course, similar to Starlink, you have just really basic satellite internet. Unfortunately, satellite internet, traditional satellite internet, I should say, it tends to be fairly slow. And then just like satellite TV, if you have bad weather or whatnot, you know, you get static on the TV, you're going to have, you might have a slower, less reliable internet connection at that point due to weather. So there's always a give or a take with these kinds of different infrastructure ideas.
Yeah, but with these new technologies that are being more required, the fiber lines, you know, those can withstand those new technologies or be upgraded to go with them.
Yep.
And then with this affordable connectivity program helping people lower costs further, say in 2025, say when these fiber lines are actually done being in, Kenosha is up there, Kenosha as a whole could be paying less for connectivity.
Yes. And that's the hope, at least. I think that would be everyone's hope in the long run is, you know, being able to have your money, your dollar stretch a little bit further there, and being able to have a gigabit connection at $50 a month is versus, you know, the $50 a month that I'm paying myself right now for my internet, which is barely, oh gosh, what is it, like 30 megabits right now. Yeah, I would happily pay for a gigabit. I know I would not saturate the line with everything I do, but boy, would I try.
You've got to do a lot to use that much internet, right? Like for an individual, you know, you might not use all of a gigabit, but when you talk about a business that's providing Wi-Fi for customers, Wi-Fi-enabled devices to... check out, to take credit cards, to do have a TV, like have a TV streaming right then. You start getting higher and higher on that, and the fiber lines in a like a business park, say, per se, they're not going to get overloaded.
No, that's really the perfect environment there. I mean, for residential, you're looking at you know, you have you know, maybe one child or young adult playing Xbox in one room or some sort of game console against a multiplayer there. You have another one streaming a video lecture. You could have someone else streaming a 4K Amazon or Netflix type show there in another room. You have these abilities to be able to have that kind of interconnectivity. But then you're also looking at like... instantaneous chatting, things like that, that are, like a Zoom call, being able to have higher quality there, not having that stutter like what I had to worry about with my in-laws a few Christmases back when we were trying to do a virtual Thanksgiving there.
So no more yelling down the hall to stop watching Netflix.
Exactly.
So how does one actually know about this affordable connectivity program? Like how does someone understand if they could take advantage of that potential $30 off and potentially pay 5 cents for their internet a month?
So it's gonna, well, first we have to wait for the ISP to be chosen before we actually know what the price levels are going to be and what the price breaks are there. Listeners, they can actually follow if they go to the sci-fi networks.com. Under there in the menu, they'll be able to go into Fiber Cities, and they'll be able to choose Wisconsin, and Kenosha is the only Wisconsin city for the time being, and they're actually able to stay up to speed there on everything. There's also a map on there that's has a nice overlay telling everyone which, you know, by the end of quarter one, quarter two of which years, we're looking at the fiber lines to be installed around certain areas and certain neighborhoods. And like I said, by this September, we expect the first set of neighborhoods to be online fully. Mm-hmm. And really, and like you said too, end of 2025 is when this full network should be fully up and running, and everyone in the city can take advantage of it however they feel like.
Yeah. So for the ACP, though, there's got to be qualifications for that program, right?
There are. So you would have to be on some sort of assisted food subsidies program. Your child needs to be on a reduced free lunch program, Medicaid, and other kinds of social services programs there wind up helping with those kind of wind up qualifying you for that program as well. There's also a full list of on the website itself. If you search for I believe it's just searching for ACP government program, I believe that website's going to come up right away.
Yeah, it looks like it's on affordableconnectivity.gov. A list on there's a listing on qualifying based on household income, various government programs like SNAP or Medicaid, or even a dependent in that household could also get someone qualified. Or if anyone receives Lifeline benefits already.
Yeah, then you're already qualified because you've already shown that. And that $30 a month is subsidy is for the general individual or for a single household there. So, you know, the entire family that's living in a single unit. If you're a member of a tribe and on tribal land, that's a $75 a month discount. And also those that qualify for the program also can receive a one-time $100 voucher for a computer, a computer, tablet, a Chromebook, laptop, whatever type devices, some sort of device to help be able to get onto the internet. Because it's one thing to have here's internet, but it's another thing to have internet and then also have the device to get onto it. Of course, I'm sure some people will be questioning, well, okay, I have this, but how do I learn how to use this? We do have programs here at the library to help. We have the technology appointments, that are on the mykpill.info website in the drop-down menu there at the top. There's also handful of classes we tend to offer here as well, and we do have the online resources if individuals feel like they just want to be able to brush up on some things, or if they're tech savvy enough but feel like they want to learn more about cybersecurity or just how to protect themselves online.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, the more you're connected, the more you need to know about being connected online.
And we also do have that digital citizenship class, too.
Yeah. Yeah, once you get everyone connected, that's where the challenge begins. Because then you have a whole new community. And it's beyond just cell phones and texting. We're talking, we mentioned job interviews, applying to jobs, school, working now.
Just shopping in general, being able to, but also knowing that, okay, can I trust this link in this email that's been sent to me? Or how do you trust? One thing you and I were taught growing up was you can't trust everything you read online. So being able to know can I differentiate actual different types of websites from one another of, you know, what's a made-up story versus factual information that's out there.
Yeah. So, getting to these fiber lines, say we're in 3 years from now, folks, we're still going with the ACP program, fiber lines are down, we're connected with whoever that ISP is going to be. Where does Kenosha go from there with these fiber lines? Because, you know, we're talking connection, we're basically talking connection, more connection in through the city, lower cost, hopefully lower cost. We'll have to see when we get those numbers, but in theory, lower costs, higher speeds as well as the more connections, and more future proofing. So once Kenosha gets to that level, what's next with these fiber lines and connectivity and all of that?
The next big step. So that's kind of step one for a grander scheme, and that goes into more smart cities. So the smart city initiative, what it really is being able to have a city that gathers a bunch of data and is able to utilize that data to make improvements for the citizens and for everyone that lives within the city, really. So having the data to know how long people are waiting at a stoplight for it to change, instead of just having it be on a dumb timer, having it be on a quote-unquote smart system, something that has cameras on it that's able to see how many cars are backed up and then adjust on the fly when lights turn yellow, red, and then the next set of traffic's allowed to go through. Being able to see how many patrons are, or pedestrians, I should say, are utilizing certain sidewalks so they can better determine which ones need to be plowed right away in city property there. Being able to get have better estimates of those attending large programs so they can know, okay, these bands are better attended than certain other bands, or certain times of day work better than others, type situation. Just even being able to better adjust lighting in some areas too, because as we start going into LED lighting, being able to adjust lumens on the fly so that we're not causing so much light pollution in certain areas at certain times of day, and having these kinds of things adjust. I mean, we've all seen the whole smart home concept of the home knowing when you're when you arrive home, turning lights on automatically, unlocking your back door, locking your door when it's when you come into the house, or being able to say to your voice system of turn on lights, turn off lights, or saying I'm going good night, and having one light set shut down, another one turn on, and set moods, things like that. So being able to utilize the data, terabytes of data in some cases, being able to process that and being able to make smarter decisions at that point.
Yeah, all of that really begins with having the correct infrastructure mm-hmm. for that high-speed internet. Because once you've got the households connected, once you got the businesses connected, then you start getting the city as a whole, as an entity, connected. Mm-hmm. According to TWI Global, that is exactly what you said, that a smart city uses information, that communication and technology, improving that efficiency, the operational efficiency, and sharing that information as well. So it's not just in the hands of the government, but it's also all public.
It's all open, yep.
And helping provide a better government for the city, for services, for citizen welfare, including environment initiatives. You said functional public transportation. So the next time that 75th is crowded,
yep.
maybe we're going to get through that a little bit faster.
Hopefully just a little bit quicker there.
Or even I'm thinking with Kenosha and thinking potential at this point, you know, sometimes we get trains happen mm-hmm. throughout Kenosha. If there's a way we could know that by some form of initiative, people could adjust their plans yeah. for the day.
Being able to have those kinds of early warning type systems there of, having that heads up of, oh, this train's going to be coming at this time. Even having bus routes in the long term, too. Being able to broadcast out their location and live location tracking there, so you can see how far away is your bus really coming from you. That doesn't necessarily require fiber internet there, but just being able to have the buses potentially hitting off of a downtown Wi-Fi network or some other specialized network, as opposed to having to pay for a cellular connection for every bus, winds up being a little bit smarter too in the long run for the city from a financial investment there.
Yeah. So, wow, we're really looking towards a really high-tech future for Kenosha. Because we're as a city, we're stuck between Chicago and Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of spotlight on us as a city. And so this is another way of getting Kenosha. And you mentioned this earlier, Kenosha being the first fiber city in Wisconsin. We're really paving a way for the rest of the state. And we're going to be kind of, as much as seems like a bunch of positives, we're going to be looking at being an experiment for the state of Wisconsin. We're going to see how that goes.
I prefer the term beta tester. But yes, we will. We're the pioneers. We are mm-hmm. the innovators. We are the trailblazers.
Yeah. And so it's lofty to be the trailblazers of this technology, this infrastructure. And I kind of want to close out on this last point is right now, what for the average person in Kenosha right now, how does these fiber lines being installed, how does this change their daily life?
Right now, there are the inconveniences of, unfortunately, where we're, you know, like you were saying earlier, having to dig up lawns and things like that, to being able to put these lines in. But I will say grass does grow back. I know from experience, I've killed my backyard, I don't know how many times. Grass does grow back. It's going to look kind of bare for a while, but you'll have a strip. That's the big impact right now, is mm-hmm. being able to have that. For a while back, we did have to worry about replacing lead pipes. And we all had to worry about having our front yards dug up or backyards dug up. Inconvenience, yes, but long-term benefits, obviously health benefits in the long term, greatly improved. And this is a minor inconvenience for now, for the next couple of years. But when we get through it, we will be better for it.
Yeah, and once it gets started, those low costs, higher speeds, more connection everywhere. You don't have to, if you're buying a home, you don't have to wonder, will I have good internet there, right?
Yep, that was actually one of the worries that I had when buying my first house here, was I had to look to a realtor and I was like, okay, I need to know exactly who my service providers are. It'll be nice not to have to worry about that ever again.
Wow. Well, Rob, it's been great having you on. Thank you for joining us on Community Matters.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.